So welcome everyone. Certainly nice to be in a larger room, isn't it? Yeah. I realize our sangha in Tampa is probably equal to this one, and probably the room is half the size of this, so it's quite spacious here. It's nice. So before we return to Master Suyin's Empty Clouds practice on the essence of Zen practice, Chan practice, are there any questions anyone has about practice? And, you know, your practice, your daily life practice, anything that's not going right or struggling or not clear how to apply the teachings to specific situations. Please don't hesitate if you have a question that concerns you to ask it. Yes. In what? Okay. Well, again, what I was talking about. This is, as many of you probably know, we have one of our intensive practice periods going on within our wider community. We have about 62 people involved in it, and one of the things that we do is I give a talk every week on the phone to the participants. So Carol's referring to something I must have said. shedding confusion wherever I go, eh? So you're asking, what did I mean by accomplishment? Because it sounds so un-Zen-like, doesn't it? Yeah, I could see where you were pushing me. Yeah. So in Zen, you know, in Dzogchen, we say, there's nothing to accomplish, right? You're already Buddhist. Everything is perfect just as it is. Right? And so we know this is really at the heart of the teaching in its most profound sense. But at the same time, right, there is much to be done. Right? And that is kind of the, in Zen tradition, it is often said, from the point of view of our true nature, right? From the point of view of things as they really are, yes, everything is inherently whole, everything is perfect. There is absolutely nothing to accomplish and nothing to do. Right? You may think going from here to here, there, you're getting somewhere, but you're really in the same place. Okay? Now. But for most of us, that is not our continuous awareness. That is the continuous awareness of Buddhists. Or highly developed people. Highly developed doesn't mean that we all can't be that highly developed. But I mean somebody who has that consciousness and awareness. So it's sort of like saying, you could come in this room and it could be covered with you know, thick layers of dust, right? And, somebody could say, oh, but you know, underneath all that dust, the floors are as beautiful as ever, right? And underneath that grime covering the windows, the windows are as transparent, as ever, right, in their nature. So I don't need to clean anything, do I? And we'd say that's kind of a stupid statement, right? Because yes, right, we know the floor is still perfect and the windows are still perfect. But from the relative point of view, they're dirty, right? And we can't see out of them. So we clean them, but we know that the window is already there, perfectly capable of being looked through, right? So it's like that. So the window is perfect just as it is. The window is easily, totally transparent. And yet, to see that, we have to do a little cleaning. So what we were talking about, or I think what I was referring to on the call was, in all the various practices that we're doing, in the intensive, and as you know, in, you know, there is quite a number we are working on, you know, every couple of weeks in each week's section. And what I was referring to, yes, we want some accomplishment, and we want to become accomplished, right? Which means what? That we develop some capacity, some ability in these various transformative practices. Why? So we can reap the benefit of the practice. You know, to know the practice is there, to read about it, to talk about it, you know, doesn't contribute to our transformation. So when I say accomplish, it's not like, you know, it's accomplishment to check off. It means that we want to practice these practices. And so when we, you know, when there's accomplishment, which means we are reaping, I mean, the reason we do all these practices is not just to do all these practices, right? It is to facilitate transformation. It is to return us to our true state. It is to cleanse our minds of all the things that darken it and hinder it and disrupt it. And like that. Mm-hmm. Which is loving kindness meditation.
Isn't that implying that I'm not happy, that they're not happy? Where our state is happiness.
So what do you?
May I be happy?
Then
why I'm not happy?
No. It's,
It's not like
that. Well,
it will be in the future.
Well, it's sort of like this, Lindsay. It's I think when you care about somebody, right? Human, animal, the earth, we naturally want, you know, things to be well with, whatever, right? We look at a plant, you know, we want it to grow well, right? We have our pet dog or cat or bird, and we want them to be happy. I mean, happy in whatever that means to a dog or a cat or a bird, right? In the same way with human beings. So it doesn't imply that they are or not happy in this moment. It is our wish always that they would be happy, always be free of illness. At the same time, we acknowledge what? It may not always be that way, right? People do get sick, people do get unhappy, and all kinds of things. But our wish is always that they'd be happy. And if you say, but he already is happy, wonderful. I still want him to be happy. Right? Don't think about it too much. No, don't think about it. Just it's you know, these things we put in words are really very natural and easy, right? I mean, metta, loving kindness, it's something you know, we have to look at again. You know, why do we have to like this practice we did earlier on benefactors? It's because why? Because we forget, right? We're so caught up in our own little drama that we forget how much we received, have received, will receive, do receive from everything and everybody, how interconnected we are. Right? That softens that sense of isolation. That softens that sense of it's all about me. You know, we can't do anything by ourselves, really. I mean, the thoughts that appear in your head, do you really know they're your thoughts, or they're not things that other people have said along the time, said to you, you've heard them say, right? Can we really say, this is my thought? I made it up all myself. Probably not true. Variations on theme of everything and everyone. And we don't know where it began and where it ended, and because don't forget, whoever we got it from, they got it from somebody. Right? It's a vast web of life and interconnection. So that's why, we can be aware of that. But we don't grab onto it, because we understand it's so variable. And it's hard to understand the causes and conditions why things are arising, why a thought is arising in this moment, or a feeling is arising in this moment, or why things are manifesting in my life. You know, I mean, we can kind of try to put it together, but often we really don't know. You know, all we know is it has arisen. It is happening, right? And, what am I going to do now that it has arisen? Do I make a big deal about it? Do I get swept away by it? Do I get overwhelmed by it? Or do I see clearly what's going on? And let go of what needs to be let go of. Practice what needs to be practiced. It's kind of simple. Any other questions? Yeah, you. The guy with the black t-shirt. Yeah, good. You know, in Zen, confusion is thought highly of. I want you to know that. So don't. Yeah, it's nothing to be embarrassed about. It's when we think we know everything, and then we're probably in trouble. But as long as we're confused, we're probably pretty safe.
Mm-hmm. Our nature is an empty one. There's no Andy that exists somewhere in and of itself permanently as a fixed thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then that comes around.
Mm-hmm.
And the one to work on this heart.
Mm-hmm. Where is that? Yeah, well, that's like everything else, Andy. It can't be found, and yet somehow it is. It's all like a rainbow. Right? So we go, right? Look at the rainbow. How beautiful it is. But if we went looking for the rainbow, we'd never find it, would we? Right? Has anybody found the rainbow? Chase after the rainbow, it's so beautiful, we drive in the direction, right? Look at that beautiful rainbow, I want to go right up to it and touch it. And what do we find? There's no rainbow. And yet, there is a rainbow, right? We can see it. But when we look for something solid or permanent or real, we cannot find it. And yet, right, so that's form is emptiness, emptiness is form. So in the world of words, in the world of designating things as things, we talk about hearts and minds and loving kindness, and we kind of divide things up, and we give them different names, so we can. These are kind of functional things, but I mean, is there, when we say heart. We all would say, we're talking about that physical organ. Right? No. Right? But we're talking about something that seems to be very central to being a human being. Right? Same way we could say heart. A heart is essential for the body, right? Without a heart, we die. In a certain sense, without love, loving kindness, and all those aspects, we really are, in a certain way, even though we're human beings, we're sort of dead. If that dries up in us. But you're absolutely right. If you look for a designated thing, you won't find it. But yet we talk this way. And this is the wonderful thing about this tradition. We can talk about rainbows, right? And yet at the same time, we know there is no such thing as a self-existing rainbow. But that's just the nature of things. I mean, we go around giving each other, we call each other all by name. And yet, we know that if we really look deeply into the skandhas, into our physical form, and our mind, and our consciousness, and awareness, and thoughts, and we can't find anything there, solid, self-existent, permanent. Everything becomes something else. Everything is made up of parts, and parts are made up of other parts, and everything is just moving around according to causes and conditions, and it. And yet, here we are. So that's the kind of the magicalness of this. That's why Thich Nhat Hanh says, you know, this is wondrous. And if we're not there, we go, no, it's kind of dull or painful or, you know, what's he talking about? Because he goes, this is, you know, these bodies are wondrous. You know, I mean, the fact that this whole thing works, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, if not millions, if not billions of, you know, parts, cell. I mean, it's, and they all seem to work, right? And we can talk, and we can hear music, and we can laugh, and we can cry, and we can, right? I mean, it's a miracle, right? And it's, you know, if you stop and just go, it's a miracle. And the miracle is us. And yet we are so lost in this drama, this thought-created drama, which is often fairly petty, you know what I'm saying? Very petty. Our little drama. The drama of self and other. That we miss the wondrousness of what's what's really going on. And so that is why, you know, you find that the practices, you know, are very simple, right? Because they're about, you know, sort of like coming back to our dirty windows. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if you came in here and if you couldn't see out the windows, right? I mean, all you need to do is what? Get a rag and a little water and vinegar, right? Like that. That's all. Right? And if you just consistently do that from top to bottom, you will what? Have clean windows. And you'll be able to see outside. And that's what mindfulness is. That's what concentration is. That's what looking deeply is. I think you got a call, Terry. Did that answer your question? Any other questions? Yeah. Yeah, again, you know, I mean, what you're saying is absolutely right. I mean, obviously, when one is aware of how much one receives from others, there's a natural, you know, without guilt or blame, you can watch that stuff, of wanting to, you know, repay or take care of or protect, right? But that just is natural, right? I mean, you know, once you understand, you know, how much our heart, let's say, is doing for, you know, let's say you kind of read something about the heart, and you go, wow, you know, it's kind of pumping the blood, and it's keeping me alive, and, you know, it does all this wonderful thing, and I don't even think about it, you know, I don't, you know, it's just doing all this, you know, day and night, even when I'm sleeping, it's taking care of me, right? Well, one might naturally go, gee, you know, I want to take good care of it. I want to protect it from harm. I want to make sure that it's healthy. And it's so wonderful that it does this without, you know, I don't pay it anything, you know. I don't, you know. And if you think about it, with all our monthly bills, we don't, you know, our heart, you know, not on the list of things that we have to send a bill to every month. Our heart doesn't send us a bill, and yet it. And again, when we think about, oh, this food that I eat, you know, there are people all over the world who's picking this stuff, right? You know, do I have any responsibility to them to make sure that they're healthy, right? that they're able to live? So it's like that. So I would say it is a wonderful awareness, interbeing, interdependence, interconnection, and obviously, to you know what comes from that is something I think we all something that we all want to answer, because it does seem. If I become aware of how much I am receiving and how much support I am getting and have gotten in my life, to only think about my own well-being seems sort of skewed, doesn't it? Right? So to be aware of the interconnection and to let that awareness percolate in one's consciousness, and to see what comes up. And again, I think that will, you know, there's no one answer, one way, one thing you're supposed to do. But obviously, you know, in the path of the Bodhisattva, you know, we want to, we have the wish, the desire to free others from their suffering, from their delusion, from their ignorance, to facilitate their well-being and happiness. You know, but that's very general, right? And it doesn't get any more general than that. And so the reach of us is, you know, how do we make it, you know, how in you know, how am I going to make that, you know, what's specific for me? What, how am I going to concretize that? In behavioral terms, you know, we talk about, you know, how am I going to operationalize that? Take that theoretical piece and turn it into something that operates in the world. Well, it's called compassion, right? It's called loving kindness. It's called caring, helping. And obviously, there's much to be done. Much to be done close at hand. In our own lives, personal lives, in our families, friends, right? In our communities, in our nation, right? In the world. And it's quite complex in a certain way. And it can be overwhelming. Because I think we live in an age, you know, 100 years ago, 200 years ago, the world wasn't so connected by information. I mean, so in other words, and the possibility of responding, you know, because of the technology is so much quicker. You know, we know about, I mean, or we have the capacity of knowing about every misery in the world, right? Every tragedy, every crisis is immediately available to us. And it can be overwhelming. Because it's so vast, the suffering in this world, right? So again, you know, not from a sense of guilt, but from a sense of love and a desire to serve, we each have to find our way. You know, if you feel you, you know, are Mother Teresa or something, you know, and that's your path, right? That's good. Right? If you feel you're not Mother Teresa, but perhaps you can be a little kinder, a little more helpful to those in your family, right? That's good. You know, people at work, people in our neighborhood, people in our community are suffering. It's not that far. People on our block. So it's everywhere. People in our own community. So it's important that we not get judgmental, you know, who's doing more, who's doing less, what's right, what's wrong, in terms of service, but just acknowledge that to be of service is a natural outgrowth, I think, a natural outgrowth of people who are cultivating, we could say, an altruistic mind, a loving mind, a compassionate mind. Because we want to take those impulses within us, senses within us, feelings within us, right, and bring them into reality. So we often say that this is a path of wisdom, this is a meditative path, this is a path of awareness and cultivation, but this is also a path of compassion and selfless service. But how that manifests is really, I think, just it's a koan, for, you know, koan in Zen, koan, a challenge, something to penetrate. So we understand clearly how that, you know, what that contribution is, that each of us want to make to our world. And again, we're all unique, we're all different. We all have different paths, therefore different futures. I think the important thing for me that these practices, like we do the benefactor practice, or we do the loving kindness practice, is that it touches a place within ourself that isn't regularly touched in our society. Because in our society, unfortunately, it's I don't know, what is it? there's a lot of independence, a lot of separation. I mean, we all know from being involved in reading the newspapers and the internet and watching the news, it's so separation, right? Conflict. I mean, what are they saying yesterday? You know, we want to take back America, right? I mean, from who? I mean, like, aren't we all Americans? You know, I mean, it's one thing to have a political, you know, viewpoint, but when the dialogue gets like that, it's all about separation. We versus, you know, who. Who's the real American? Who's the real human being? You know, who's the real follower of God? It can get pretty far out, but kind of dangerous. Because it's the opposite of interconnection. It's the opposite of interdependence. It's the opposite of seeing that we're all in this together. Right? Whatever our political views or, you know, what we call our God. Right, or where, or the color of our skin, or ethnic background, or the language we speak, or all these things, you know, we still depend on one another. And that consciousness of interbeing, interconnection, interdependence, manifests again in a desire to protect and to heal everyone. And to look for the well-being of everyone. So again, there's a lot to do. I think I sent around I don't know if it went out to everybody. It might have just gone to the members of the Florida community, but. There was an interview that Thich Nhat Hanh gave. He was giving a retreat in England, I think last week, 2 weeks ago. And he did an interview in a major newspaper of the UK. It was quite wonderful. But I was very struck how and I think the interviewer, the journalist, was very struck that Thich Nhat Hanh seems just so concerned about the state of the world and the massive problems that we're all facing and the incapacity up to now of the world, our leaders, the people who make decisions to deal with things. And he said an interesting thing. He said, we might not meet the challenge. Right? He said civilizations have come and gone many times. And it very well may be that the human beings, we are so ignorant, right? So incapable of seeing the bigger picture, so focused just on our own little needs and not seeing the needs of everyone, the planet, etc., that we may not be able to prevent the kind of significant crises that are happening, you know, everywhere. But he said that that's no reason to despair. He said it's no different than someone who, I mean, the most you read the article, you know, I mean, it was quite wonderful. He said it's just like, he said, if you're a human being and you know that you have a terminal illness, right, it doesn't mean you have to get into despair. It means that you have to live more fully and more wonderfully every day you have. Life becomes even more meaningful knowing that it could end. And he was very impassioned in this interview in saying it is so important that we develop communities of people who live by these values of interconnection, interbeing, interdependence. And I mean, it wasn't just sorry, talking about his own communities. He was saying that that's something that he's devoted to, you know, to spreading the teachings and the practices and cultivating, developing communities. But he said, you know, all like-minded communities, how important that is. That, so that we can offer to the larger society another way, another vision of life. Not just intellectually, you know, but actually because we're living it. I mean, I think you get a sense in our community of Americans. There's just a lot of fear, right? A lot of anger, a lot of confusion, mixed up with a lot of delusion. So it's kind of a tinderbox, isn't it, these days? But I always come back to, you know, that wonderful thing that Thich Nhat Hanh said about, you know, the boat people, you know, on the boat. You know, when the boat people were in Vietnam, you know, leaving Vietnam, the refugees, and they'd be in the boats, and they'd be in the China seas, and the storms, and everybody's panicking. Everybody's scared. He's saying somebody has to stay calm. Somebody has to stay clear for everybody else in the boat. And again, I think that is one of the gifts of this practice. Because, you know, we are constantly being barraged by messages, right? Consumer messages, the buy, right? And messages about how we should look. You know, we're all supposed to be young and beautiful, and, you know, perfect bodies. And it's funny, I get this eight peak times, and there was this kind of magazine thing they insert on health, and the cover was all about perfect abs. And then there were lots of articles in there about it with pictures, and I thought, this is what's wrong with our society. You know, it's like, you know, perfect abs. You know, and just pictures and articles. And then I came down this afternoon and my mother's house, and she gets the New York Times, and I just happened to see this full-page ad for Calvin, I'm not sure it was Calvin Klein, but somebody's underwear. And there was, it was a full page in New York Times, you know, which is quite large. And there was this, you know, very attractive young woman in underwear. And you know what the brand was called? No. That was the St. Pete Times. This is the New York Times. It was called Envy. You know, envy. You know, in this kind of weird world that we're in, we think envy is not a good thing, you know. Like it disturbs the mind, and it, you know what I'm saying? But this was like held up as a wonderful thing. Right. Oh, anyhow, still that would be what you'd be about. Did you know what I mean? That you would want, you would want other people to be envious of you. It's you know, you'd think you'd be embarrassed to kind of, you know, it's like one of the kind of things you might think, but you certainly wouldn't put on in the newspaper. But, you know, there's no shame. So again, you know, the messages of consumerism, the messages of perfection and body, and it's also ego-based, self-based, right? And the messages of fear and anger and divisiveness, right? They permeate, right, our culture, right? I mean, the images and the messages, I mean, it's hard, you know, unless you live a very isolated life, right? But if you are in the culture, as most of us are, and even though consciously we may not be living, you know, in that consciousness, it's still permeating our consciousness. You know what I'm saying? It's very pervasive. You know, how can we resist it? And I think that this practice is a wonderful way to resist it. Because when we leave that whole manufactured, delusive, hallucinatory world of images and thoughts, right, which are just being put out there for what reason? To manipulate us, right? Simply to manipulate us. I mean, that envy thing was not there other than to what? To get us to buy their product. To make us feel, I want to look like that or feel like that, or I want other people to be, and you know, who knows what. But it's all about manipulation, isn't it? Either trying to get us to buy something, or to think a certain way, or not to think a certain way, right? And so how does one get clear? Right? How does one have a place within themselves that is real and authentic and wholeness, you know, that these manipulative images and messages, right, that are always being put to us. We don't, you know, we're like the mountain. The mountain, you know, the winds blow and the animals scurry about, but the mountain is steady, unmoved. Right? How are we, how can our minds be like the sky, right? All kinds of planes and birds and things can fly through it, but the sky is basically undisturbed. So this practice of mindfulness, this practice of meditation, of awareness, of looking deeply underneath the message, I think is I wouldn't say the only way, but certainly an incredibly significant way that we can maintain purity purity meaning of things we're talking about, purity of heart. You know, that we keep an open, loving, compassionate mind, right? And that we're clear that the purpose of life is to facilitate our own awakening and to work for the benefit of others. That's, you know, so simple. Oh, that's what life's about, right? And then yet, if we're not clear, right? If we've allowed these messages to stir us up, it's very easy to what? And we all know that. This is not, it's not easy to be strong, is it? To be clear. So the practice supports us in that capacity. So we can live in an environment in which the consciousness of society is fairly polluted, right? Fairly toxic in many ways. And yet, we don't have to be poisoned by it. So, again, while I would certainly say that the traditional purpose of the meditative path and the great fruits of that it brings individuals is probably, as Thich Nhat Hanh seems to be saying, is even more necessary these days. Because in this mass culture and because of the power of media and messages, you know, which is fairly new. I mean, human beings, we've been on this planet for thousands of years. And not to say that there haven't been forces to manipulate, but the power of the media to entrap consciousness is unbelievably sophisticated and powerful these days. So to keep our ground, right, and to be able to see under the message, to see under the feeling, to look deeply into things. We need this practice, don't we? Or some practice. Again, like Thich Nhat Hanh said, that, you know, when everybody in the boat is freaking out, right? Freaking out with fear, freaking out with despair, freaking out with anger, right? Freaking out with blame, divisiveness, right? I mean, his point was, are you willing to be that one who doesn't go down that road? You know, are we willing to be that one who stays grounded, clear, stable, can see the bigger picture, and therefore can really be a support and a guiding beacon for everyone else in the boat? Oh, that's been an interesting. Poor empty cloud. I mean, he is a true master, and I can't believe it. I'm just babbling on. Forgive me, master. So, anyhow, thank you for your questions. When I come back in 2 weeks, maybe I'll make a promise, and you can keep me to it. I won't take any questions, and we'll go right to the teachers. So, because they're very important, and we need the balance. So thank you. So thank you all for coming. The only announcement I have is that we will be having a retreat in October in Tampa at the Franciscan Center. It's a 3-day retreat, and registration information will be posted at our website this Wednesday, September 1st.